Kof Dalad Sivan, Thursday the 7th of June, Reb Dudi Rosenberg, The Spies and Their Agenda.
The Parsha describes the Meraglim as Rushei B'nai Yisroel. Rushei B'nai Yisroel.
Not the Rishuim, the heads.
This is a Rashi says it's a Lushan Chashivus, that they were important, they had stature, they had caliber. We must appreciate that these representatives were selected by none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. One example was Yeshua ben Nun, who ultimately succeeded Moshe as a leader. Now let's look at the end of the saga. These people are described as Eidu Huru. Evil assembly. That's a far cry from Rushei B'nai Yisroel. The paradox in Rashi is also famous. It says, Vayelchu vayuvoyu lahakish alichusun lebiusun ma alichusun biusun baitzuru hoisu af alichusun baitzuru hoisu. Which would ostensibly mean that in the outset everything was no good. Yet the same Rashi says clearly, that in the outset that they were decent, good people. How do you reconcile that? There's a famous Imre Emes, but we're going in a different direction. The million-dollar question is, of course, how and where did they err? First, let's explore the backdrop of life in the Midbar. Not just as we remember from school, but from a slightly more sophisticated perspective. Imagine, they lived next to the Gud Lador, in close proximity to their leader. Their houses, their boats were surrounding the Mishkan, the ultimate presence of the Shechina. They were protected by the Anane HaKuvot, constantly shielding them from strong sun, even destroying snakes and scorpions encountered en route. They enjoyed an unlimited water supply, courtesy of Be'er Shel Miriam, a boulder with endless drinking resources. They never went to Brent Cross to buy a garment, ever. Clothes grew with them and were forever clean and freshly laundered and pressed. Not money laundering. Real thing. And they never visited the bathroom, as the Mon precluded this. And the Mon was probably the ultimate manifestation of wonder, emanating from the heavens daily, regularly. Lechem in Hashemayim. As described by the Kehilas Yitzchok of Vilna, this is very interesting because it dawned on me during the preparation of this to what extent that our concept of Bechire was curtailed hugely through a cash on delivery process where all iniquities were meted out with swift punishment. For example, they sinned at the Egel, immediately they were checked as soiters, drinking gold dust to see who was guilty. It was a parsha of the Misoinonim who desired meat. No sooner did they put the meat in their mouth that they were killed while it was there. Oideni buso bain shenehem, and they were decimated. The Meraglim themselves died ignominiously in a humiliating death befitting the sin very, very soon after. Korach was swallowed up promptly after his uprising. No messing around, it happened straight away. But the ultimate daily test was emerging from one's tent. In the morning, and finding your mom miles away, because yesterday you overslept Bugenavurumsman for Krishna. And here you are looking for your breakfast, and it's a long way away. Even clarified monetary disputes and many others, but the time limit precludes going into further detail. The common denominator is life in the Midbar was determined by an unparalleled Hashkuche Prutis and a cash on delivery punitive system. The Shechina was manifest with a tangible reality. All this is to come to a sudden halt. The Jewish nation would now assume the mundane tasks of farmers, agriculturists, even worse, bricklayers, tailors, bakers, water carriers, all laying new foundations for an infrastructure of civilization. Essentially, an unparalleled Hester, where the Ribbono Shel Olam is hidden and his presence is diminished, similar to our lives today, with the exclusion of Aliyah LeRegel and the prophecy of the Nevi'im. Enter the Meraglim. Bale Madrege, Oyv Hashem, who shuddered at what they saw as a frightening and dismal future, it was nothing short of a spiritual catastrophe. A parallel we might draw is a Kollel in Geman after 10 years of growth and Aliyah in Torah, courtesy of his father-in-law's caste, who supported him, is called home. It's time to join the business. Tachlis. What a contrast. You know, there was a Yid who was accosted by a Mashilach when he parked his car outside his house. He came back after work. And the Yid comes to him, oh, Sholem, ich kum für meine Sholem. Ich gehe für meine Sholem. So the man replies, ich kum von Arbeit. Ich gehe von Arbeit. But the question is now compounded. So what was wrong then, essentially, with the Meraglim's view? But before we answer, let us examine Aharon HaKohen's role in the Ma'asehu Egel. The Gemara in Sotah quotes the Pusik, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefunov. He built an altar in front of him. But it's the Gemara expounds it differently, and he says, Vayiven, he understood, Mizavuach, from the one who was slaughtered, Lefunov, in front of him, referring to Chu, who was just now a fresh Koban and was killed by the Klal Yisrael. And if he was going to be next with his head on the chop, then he would be Mekayim, Im Yehurek Koyen Venuvi B'Yoim Echad. This would be a catastrophe which one can't even begin to think about, that on one day they would slay, referring to Klal Yisrael Chas V'Shulu, a priest and a prophet on the very same day. And he wanted to avoid this. But if he wouldn't have, would it not have been simpler for Aharon HaKohen to be killed rather than forming and creating this Eger? His Matzaiva, Aharon HaKohen, would have read, Poi Nitma, Aharon HaKohen, Shemusa Nafshoi Al Kiddush Hashem, Yotze Nishmusoi Be'echot. Moirudi. Instead, he tarnished for his entire life, he is tarnished with this scornful episode. The Puradime was mitzvuse bisgam, as Rashi quotes in Chukas. Even the garments that he wore when he entered the Kodesh HaKadushim, they couldn't be gold because Ein Ketege Nasa Senege. And who was the Ketege? He was. He built that Ege. What an embarrassment. So this brings us to the core and the essence of the Shiur.
He came by himself, the Hebrew.
Later, but he was the one that formed it. He collected the money and he took the gold and he went around to everybody and he took all the matbayas and he threw it into the fire. And then somebody put the shem and then afterwards it was Vayetzor Egel Azeh. But the initial activities towards it were Hanukkah. So the core and the essence of the Shias is the following. There are frequently two approaches to Avodas Hashem. Either my aspiration and my goal is to become a Talmud Chochem, a Baal Madreige, a great Avod Hashem, and to be elevated from this world. Or B, to do the will of my Creator without any agenda at all, but in practice, al pi shilchan ur. The difference between the two is A is the service of oneself, and B is a servant that has sublimated his ego to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And Ahar Nakoyen chose B. And we are explaining this because if it was for himself, then clearly Ahar Nakoyen would have opted out to be Ne'erig al Kiddush Hashem and never be tainted with anything which was associated with this. But he didn't. He didn't want Chas V'Shulim that Eden would reach a point beyond return where it would be Im Yehue Koyen V'Nuvi B'Yoyim Echad. So you see a choice that he thought, what would the Rebbeinu Shel Olam want of me at this given moment? And that is a selfless choice, a choice without an agenda, as we'll soon explain. I give you an example to illustrate this distinction. Yes, Reb Tuvi Tatugi came and he'll appreciate it. It's Seder night with all its splendor. The Rosh HaMishpucha has prepared punctiliously for this heavenly night. 30 days before, he's opened his Mishnah Berurah, he studied the Haluchas. He's holding his kos, reciting this climactic brucha of Asher Guluni v'Gulas HaVesayinim in Mitzrayim, with all the family members around him, upstanding, recognizing the kindnesses of the Eibishter on his ongoing redemption for Klal Yisrael. But he's a Hatzula member. And his beeper goes off just then. He puts down his kos, he takes the call, he glances at the disappointed faces of all the family and runs to a call of a lady with a suspected cardiac arrest. He rushes with the car to the destination, only to find that she had an overdose of matzah and a chazan ish here of Mura. Every Baruch Hashem, every Elech Yid would have taken this call. But how would they feel afterwards? If the reaction was A, what a pity. I missed out on a rare moment of spiritual elevation, a meaningful moment together with the Eibishter, because of this irresponsible and pathetic woman. Or B, I fulfilled the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's will. I will continue to do so. I did the right thing. And all bad feelings that emanate are only caused by the Sitra Acha, the Sutan, and the Yetzer Hara. Mordechai Tzadik, let's move to Megillas Esther, overheard Bigson and Seresh plotting to assassinate Achashverosh. Could any news be more welcome? His wife would ultimately return, and the Rusha would be disposed of. Surely this is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's salvation that he was awaiting. But no. Mordechai conveys this clandestine plan to the king, whose life was saved, and Mordechai is back to square one. His wife is in the palace, but why? Because he opted for B. A would have convinced him, Esther is being abused regularly by this dog, Miyad Kelev Yechidusi. And this was the turning point for her release. And it would all be L'shem Shemayim. But if he thought along the lines of B, which he actually did, then he came to the, he deduced, if I was privy to hear this, and I overheard the plans of Bichsel Vaseresh, for what purpose? More so, what does the Rebbeim Shloile want of me, and how should I act to please him now? Disregarding my own personal agenda. The Amshin of a Rebbe had a chuset. He came to him with a shale to ask for clarity in the following dilemma. I want to visit a friend, terminally ill in hospital. On the one hand, I'm concerned regarding the problem of Shmira Senayim, as patients all around are in various states of immodesty. On the other hand, the visit will shake me up to recognize how futile, how mortal and fragile is man. Yaskilo yoyim amise. The Rebbe asked him, did it occur to you that the visit may make your friend feel better? The first two questions that is asked the Rebbe are essentially geared to me and me and me and only point in that one direction. The very holy, very lofty, is concerned about Shmira Senayim, my Shmira Senayim. He's concerned about the fact that the Yaskilei Mamisa, and he is going to become a greater person, and he's going to be moved by that. But ma hi rachem, af atu rachem. Ma hi chanen, af atu chanen. To emulate the Rebbein Shlalom's ways, because the Eibishter is intrinsically compassionate. And man is there to copy the ways of the Rebbein Shlalom. And the reason that he would go to hospital is because the other person will feel better. That would be an act of compassion. So we have again an illustration of the two different sides of the coin. I'm personally guilty of the iniquity of looking into a cipher during Chazuros Hashatz. I'm trying to abstain, but it boils down to the same choice. Chaparan, noch ha-teure thought, noch ha-kapitel tehillim, noch ha-aluche, or to do what the Eibishter really wants. And listen to the shatz, repeating the Shmoyne Esel. So now, this clarifies the profound error of the Meraglim. They were into being Balei Madreige, Oivdei Hashem. Like the Pusik describes them, Rushei B'nai Yisrael Haimu. But they wanted to continue a euphoric existence, as elucidated by the Avnenezer, by the Chedisherim. But in the end of the day, the Eibishter asks his servants to do his will, not my version of his will, tainted with a subjective and a personal agenda. Now at this point we can address the stira in Rashi as well. It's true, bo'oiseshu k'shayrim hoy, because they were guided and geared by maybe a lofty aspiration. But this Aitzeru was a distortion of thought that brought in its wake calamity and evil. So they were makish halichuson l'itziuson, because at the very onset, that distortion caused a terribly evil outcome. But if you examine it, it's voice of shuk, shayrim hoy. And the proof, if you want a raya, comes immediately afterwards with the Mapilim. The Mapilim, if you remember the story, were the ones that went up and they were said, we're going into Eretz Yisrael regardless. A version of Wiedergutsmachen. We will enter the land. But the Eibishter said it's too late. It will take another 40 years. No, we'll persist. We'll get it right this time. But we know the result was self-destructive, because they were all decimated until the last ones. Vayakim, Vayaksim, Ad Chomo, I think the Pusik says. But the message is clear. Ach, Ba'ashem, Al Timroidu. Don't rebel, because your frimkeit is ultimately an act of defiance. But you are so consumed in our own version of what's Rutzen Hashem, but we don't think of what the Eibishter really wants now. What was a mitzvah for the Meraglim yesterday has now become an avaira for the Ma'apilim today. The popular notion, you know, before I go on to this, I just think that we should just, how to say, remantic or dilute to a certain extent. There was a famous encounter between Rabbi Yankel Radzemine and the Chiddush Arim near Warsaw about this time of the year. And he said to the Heilige Chiddush Arim said to Rabbi Yankel Radzemine that he doesn't look good. He looks very, very poorly. So Rabbi Yankel said to him, this time of the year, it's no wonder that I look like this. The way the settings are going at this point of events, and I see the story of Korach, the story of the Meraglim, the story of the Misoinanim, the story, one after the other, this is the Dol Daya, and look what's happening here. And it's difficult for me to come to terms with this, and so therefore it positively makes me feel ill. Rabbi Sharim says to him, Oy vay, Rabbi Yankel, sagte, fin seira vayre, sagte, hat man gemacht teure. Fin insere mitzvahs, wer weiß, was it's up. Loosely translated means that it's maybe true, you're looking at these iniquities, one after the other, transgressions of the Dol Daya. But their avayres became our teure. And our mitzvahs were never recorded like this. So they must be on a very, very different level. Rabbi Yankel was satisfied with this response. I'm just saying that in order to put things marginally in perspective, that we make this maybe outlandish attack, but we have to remember who the Meraglim were. They were Takerusha B'nai Yisrael. The popular notion is that you write your tombstone during your life. It's written in a lot of books today. The message, essentially, is the Matzaiva will not record the destination of your cruises, neither will it record the shares and property accumulated in your lifetime, and it will not have written on it either which model Maserati that you drove. But what will be written are the good deeds, the chasudim, and the mitzvahs performed. But in truth, this too is a fallacy. Because it's only the Rebbein Shlomo that needs to know what we've achieved in our life, as the following story will illustrate. An elderly Yid, Azuk Mbu Bayumem, came to the Beis Yisrael of Ger. And he asked the following question. I am, he said, moving on. Unfortunately, I did not merit children during my lifetime. I did, however, accumulate an amount of capital, and for this I came today to the Rebbe to seek guidance. How should I spend it? Should I leave a binyan, a yeshiva building in my name? Should I leave maybe a gemach, lezeicher nishmas, myself and my wife, that every single time people come, take money, return money, that those mitzvahs will constantly replenish? Perhaps in my name there should be a chasna hall that every single time there's a mitzvah vachnusas kala, four couples are going to get married. That will be l'ili nishmusi. So I came to the Rebbe to ask what he suggests. So the Rebbe responded, my suggestion is to invest in Achzukas HaTorah in a way that not a soul in the world will ever find out who gave this money. And in this manner, the mitzvah will have no personal negias, no paneers, and will be free and pure of any personal agenda. But it will please your Father in heaven more than anything else. Thank you.